So, good afternoon, one and all. Maybe there are people who have joined in here from other parts of the world, because we have sent out this invite to the entire network in which both the speakers of our seminar today operate, and that's a fairly wide network. So if you are in other time zones, then greetings of whatever time you are in, and welcome to all of you on this special occasion, which is really a very big moment in the ICS's existence, let us say. And let me explain why I say that it's a very big moment in our existence, because the ICS, unlike other research institutions or think tanks which are working on China, has a much more comprehensive and holistic approach to China, which includes looking at not just IR, foreign policy, security, but looking at the social, political, economic, cultural dynamics. And this health portal, about which we will hear more, was started, it was conceptualized, I would say, almost 10 years ago. And it is an extremely proud moment for me to bring the story up to this point on the shoulders of these two very, very wonderful, capable professionals, scholars, dedicated to this task of building up the health portal. My first tenure as the director, which began in 2012, had actually been preceded by some collaborative activity that Rama and I had done with another colleague who's also part of the Institute, Professor Geeta Nambishan. And we were actually examining the role of the state and the health and education sectors. And out of that, actually, this conversation about looking at these two sectors, not just in a comparative context, but also to look at these sectors from the perspective of where and how we lacked information, we lacked resources the material kind. Of course, finances were a different part of the story. And out of that, therefore, this process began. And through the contacts in China that were built up both by the ICS and Rama's own network into within the health professionals in China and the United States, began this story of looking at the entire gamut of health resources and health issues in China. Mother Rima then came in to the Institute in 2012, in fact, or early 2013. And between them, then this process of building up this corpus of resources began. Mm-hmm. And through collaborations, through seminars, through bilateral meetings, gradually this process became bigger and bigger. And today I'm very, very happy and proud to announce the establishment of this health portal. I leave it to Rama and Madhu Rima to talk about it. Once again, without taking any more time, let me just say that this is a very happy moment for me personally, but also from the perspective of the Institute of Chinese Studies. Rama, would you just take over now?
I think Patricia will speak.
I saw her leave. That's why I was a bit wondering.
No. Patricia will speak next, and then I'll follow her.
So, Patricia, can I request you to take the floor, please?
Ma'am, before we begin, may I please just introduce the panelists very quickly?
Yes, Akshat, go ahead.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Good afternoon. My name is Akshat Meni. I am a research intern at the ICS. It gives me immense pleasure in extending a warm and humble welcome to all to the ICS's special event on the expanding scope of China studies in public health in India, institutional collaborations and networks. The ICS TSMCH Public Health Resource Portal is a repository of materials consisting of peer-reviewed articles, working papers, primary sources, books, and reports compiled under the Institute of Chinese Studies and the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health, Jawaharlal Nehru University. The portal is aimed at expanding the scope of China studies in public health and assisting scholars interested in engaging with this area. The resource portal will include all the published materials that have been put together in the ICS Health Unit, and as a part of the course on comparative health systems offered by Professor Rama Paru at CSMCH. We have three very eminent panelists today. We start with Professor Patricia O'Croy. She is an emeritus fellow at the ICS. She served as the chairperson of the ICS from 2015 to 2021. Her research interests center on aspects of family, kinship, gender, popular culture, and social policy in respect to both India and China. Followed by Professor Roy, we have Professor Rama V. Paru. She is a professor at the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health, Jawaharlal Nehru University, and an honorary fellow at the Institute of Chinese Studies, New Delhi. She is also an honorary professor at the India Studies Center, Central China Normal University, Wuhan, China. Her major areas of research interest include commercialization of health services, infectious diseases, comparative health systems, and health inequalities. She is currently a member of the ethics community at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, that is AIIMS, the Technical Appraisal Committee for Health Technology Assessment, the Department of Health Research, the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, Government of India, as well as the Scientific Advisory Group, Indian Council of Medical Research, New Delhi. Our final panelist is Dr. Madhurima Nandi. She is a fellow in health and human development at the Center for Social and Economic Progress, New Delhi. She holds a PhD in public health from the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health, Jawaharlal Nehru University, New Delhi. Her areas of interest include studying different health service systems, health policies, and inequalities in health. Today's special event will be chaired by Professor Alka Acharya. She is the honorary director of the ICS and chairperson at the Center for Educational Studies, SIS, Jawaharlal Nehru University. She has been teaching courses on Chinese foreign policy and political economy to the master's and MPhil students and guiding doctoral research since 1993. She has authored a book titled China and India, Politics of Incremental Engagement, published in 2008, and most recently edited a volume titled Boundaries and Borderlands, a Century After the 1914 Shimla Convention. Before I hand over to the chair, I would like to ask all the participants to follow a few housekeeping rules. All participants will be muted during the presentation. Questions can be posted in the chat box during the seminar. Alternatively, you may use the raise your hand option to ask your question during the interactive session. You shall then be called upon to unmute yourself and ask your question. I shall now hand over the chair. The floor is yours. Thank you so much.
I'm not sure if we know who is the chair and who is giving remarks here. I thought Alka was chairing and I was giving remarks. But should I go ahead with my couple of words of wisdom?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, certainly.
Okay. Well, it's a very fulfilling moment for me, as it is for Alka, myself in a lesser role in this, to make some sort of opening remarks at this special event. It's something that is very close to my heart through the last decade and in a way for even longer. I think we can already, Alka has said quite a lot. Akshat has also introduced the Comparative Health Center Health Unit program. And Professor Baru will come on and explain more, I think, about the genesis of the project and the program. But I'd like to make a few observations, some of them sort of self-evident, if you like. The first one, echoing ALCA, is to remind us all, really, that the comparative health unit is, relatively speaking, a rather long-standing. The activities date back almost a decade to 2013 with an ICSSR-sponsored project under the title of Transnational Actors and Commercialization of Healthcare, a China-India Comparative Study, which focuses on the role of global actors and agencies in changing healthcare paradigms in both countries. These things don't seem to happen anymore in our relations with ICS, but it led to a second project to create an India-China Comparative Resource Center at ICS. It began, I think, in 2014 and extended to 2016, but it is the effective basis of the program that we're discussing today, and also enabled the a project on the commercialization of elderly care in India and China, focused on Delhi and Shanghai in particular. This itself is a very important and published study, and one that certainly needs much more publicity than it's yet received. And from there we went on to the present WHO-sponsored project, which I'm sure Rama will talk about, on the integration of health services for older persons in the urban context, select countries in the Asia-Pacific region. This, I would like to emphasize, also enables, though it doesn't tackle head-on, outreach beyond India-China comparison to other countries in the region as a whole. It is, in fact, one step more enabling. Rather echoing ALCA, I'd like to say that the India-China comparative aspect to the project doesn't appear to have require any special justification. The usual things that people say, India and China are both large Asian countries or regional powers in South and East Asia, respectively. They are galactic forces, as some people say, that have had, that is India and China, rather different political, economic, and social systems and approaches to health and medicine in the past and in the present or in the modern period. At the same time, like the rest of the world, they're all being impacted in various ways by larger social, political, and economic forces that go under the various rubrics of, say, modernization, reforms, globalization, and so on, marked in particular by tensions between profit and non-profit institutions and inequities of access. These factors are reason enough for undertaking self-reflexive comparative studies of the Chinese health system from an Indian base and perhaps one could say an Indian perspective. Nonetheless, it's remarkable just how little research in this area is done, how spotty it is, and in fact, how skewed is the focus. Let me explain what I mean. And ALCA has already alluded to this. The overall framework of such comparisons, that is India and China, especially but not exclusively from India, is conducted in a modality nowadays, either of competition in the constructing of what construction of what people sometimes call nowadays league tables, using the football metaphor of relative performance on various factors. Who is better? Who is upper? Who is going faster? Who is going slower? Who's left behind? And this is something which is, goes across the board with many, many factors in the health center and other social variables as well. And the second is really the aspect of geopolitical dominance and rivalry between India and China in the Asian region, the Asian Pacific, the Indian Ocean, Ocean and Asia Pacific, or even globally. And somehow, even when one's studying, or especially when one is studying pandemics like COVID, one will see that the main interest really is to ask questions from India, but it's a global phenomenon as well. For instance, how has the pandemic affected the status, role, and future of Xi Jinping's leadership domestically, and also on the world stage, with questions like who's to blame, who started it, who's to pay for it, and so on. So all these questions, rather than cooperation in understanding the forces, the challenges, and the institutions that the reformed health centers in both countries are facing, is left in the background. I think this is the distinctiveness of the present project, and is something that one has seen recently in the really excellent paper that Madhurima gave a couple of weeks ago on the health systems of India and China, looked in their own right, and also with reference to global realities. Now, Alka was very modest in the beginning as she talked about this project, and there is one thing that I would like to emphasize and or underline. She's remarked on it already, and that is: can anyone see what I've got here? Is something visible to the camera? I can't see myself, so I don't know. Yes?
Ma'am, you'll have to raise the book a little higher.
A little higher, okay. Yes. I did actually take a photo and have it on the slide, but never mind. So this is a book which is published in 2000 or 2001, edited by G.P. Deshpande, one of the founders of the ICS, and Alka Acharya herself. And it was published for after 50 years of India-China official relations, called Crossing a Bridge of Dreams, India and China, 50 years of India and China. Now, in this book, there is a paper published by, written by, under the section of Polity and Society, written jointly by three great girls of JNU Social Sciences, Alka herself, Rama Baru, and Geeta Nambisan. And it was called The State and Human Development, and focused on the areas of health and education. I think that it's very worthwhile going back to this cornerstone paper, taking credit for it, and applauding what has happened subsequently in so far as the effort is made to look in social science terms rather than in geopolitical or competitive terms, or let me put it this way, look in social science terms rather than in geopolitical terms, look in cooperative terms rather than in competitive terms at the health systems in both countries. And not only that, but the format as presently articulated also enables the outreach to other countries of Asia, the Asia Pacific region. I think that that in itself is also a most enabling factor, expanding what was done earlier, just India and China, into something much, much, much bigger. And I think the map that you've got in front of you, if it's still there on the screen, will be demonstrating that very, very well with reference to the project at hand. So I can only here say that it is a moment of great pleasure and fulfillment to signal this and pass on the filling in of the details to Rama and Madhurima themselves, who are carrying on this particular project along with partners in different countries. I might also just flag that the education sector is something that we need to look at further. We have worked and published and held seminars in that area of social development, and it's something that that we would like to flag with equal interest in the years to come. So thank you very much, and I'll hand back to the chair, I think is Alka, or to Akshat, whoever is conducting the rest of the proceedings.
I don't know, now the thing goes on, auto mode, in the sense that now Rama and Madhurima will be holding the fort. And it's over to them. And Rama?
Thank you very, very much. Firstly, on behalf of the faculty of the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health and its chairperson, Dr. Acharya, who could not join us today, I really want to say that it's been a very, very special journey from what has already been described by Alka, which actually began and was formalized through that paper we wrote jointly in 2001, through conversations when three of us were actually wardens of Godavari Hostel, and we would have these interesting conversations on what each of us was doing and trying to understand China. And my interest in China actually came in the late 90s when I was looking at health sector reforms globally. And I think Patricia alluded to that. And when I was looking for writings on what was happening in different countries with different socio-political regimes, it was very interesting that the divergence in the China-India story post-1947 and 49 with the Chinese Revolution and the Indian path of democracy, how it impacted the health system, and how, in fact, the egalitarian policies of guarantee of work, food security, etc., brought dramatic improvements in the health status of Chinese population compared to the Indian. And it resonated with the philosophy and the focus of the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health, which was trying to frame the understanding of health and health outcomes and access to health services from the framework of the socio-political determinants of health. I owe a special thanks to my seniors in the center, Dr. Banerjee and Professor Imrana Kadir, who instilled an interest to say that let's look at other countries as well. And I think this China story coming into the center came in through the comparative health systems course, which I started offering 20 years ago, which actually I began with looking at Western countries. I was looking at UK, USA, and Canada. But the health sector reform story opened a very new arena for me, because I realized that market socialism had brought about fundamental changes, had brought in commercialization and market principles into what was essentially a publicly funded health services. And interestingly, much of the scholarship at this time came from the Harvard University. So there were a lot of Western watchers on China, and there were very few who were Chinese and who were writing on China. And one of them was Professor Shenlang Tang, who in fact became a very important mentor for us as we proceeded on this journey to build the China-India comparative, and also building the networks that we have today with various institutions in China. One of the things that used to bother me at that time was that not having any command over the Chinese language and seeing the entire health services and its evolution through Western writing, I felt was limiting. And I think Shenlang Tang's association opened up for us what Chinese were saying within and researching in their own context. The other very important aspect, I think, for the teaching program of the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health was that a lot of our history of public health was drawn from what happened in the West. And I think the comparisons at one level were not really comparable because you had very different histories. You had the colonial experience and being a post-colonial society. So I think the China, particularly studying China from the Mao period to 1978, and then the various phases in their economic liberalization from 1978 to the present, gives you a very, very interesting story, both for divergence and convergence of issues that face the health service system. And as Patricia rightly said, the challenges that the health service systems face in both countries. I think the other very important building block in this was the support that the seniors and the younger generation of scholars in the Institute of Chinese Studies gave us. Studying public health and being China watchers in public health is one part of the whole story. We probably began like that. But I think being collaborating with the Institute for Chinese Studies actually gave us a platform where we could listen to people who were steeped into China studies, who knew the language, and who brought different aspects of China's society, politics, et cetera, to inform some of our own thinking on how we look at how sociopolitical developments actually shaped health systems and health service systems. I really want to say the writings of GPD and later of Patricia and Professor Mohanty and the many conversations we had were very, very valuable. And more recently, I still keep recalling that when Hemant Adlaka spoke about the Fang Fang diary, which of course he had the privilege to read in Chinese, and it kindled our interest to actually read the translation, which I'm sure is not as good as having read it in the original. I also want to say that people like Shobari Mitra and others who brought in the ideas of, you know, insights into the culture, et cetera, really enriched our own journey in doing this comparative work. I'm also very, very proud to say that a lot of the building blocks, which in fact Patricia alluded to, and Patricia, your mind is so sharp. I really, some of the things that I had forgotten you mentioned, we did with very, very modest funding from Indian institutions, the Indian Council of Social Science Research and the Indian Council of Medical Research, because apart from looking at health sector reforms and transnational actors and arrangements for elderly care, where we were able to go to China and actually do some primary work, we also did a dialogue on tuberculosis and tuberculosis control in both these countries, which was funded by the Indian Council of Medical Research. And as we went further, Madhurima and I were able to actually write up this book, which was published by Routledge, on commercialization of medical care in China, changing landscapes. And I think this was a very enduring and a very enriching piece of work. in the journey, this long journey, and I said, mentioned earlier, there were two very important people. One was Dr. Lincoln Chen, who headed the China Medical Board in China, and Shenlang Tang, who actually put us in touch with some wonderful Chinese scholars. And one, of course, was Hu Shanlian, who was heading this Shanghai Health Development Research Center. It's quite a unique phenomena in China that the municipality actually has a health development research center where they collect data, analyze data, and feed it into their planning process. We had contacts with Beijing University. We managed to build relationships with Central China Normal University, Professor Ma Min, and the India Studies Center there. And out of this grew a consortium. And it is this consortium which actually applied for, firstly, a membership to the Asia Pacific Observatory of the WHO, followed by two rounds of projects which went through fairly severe scientific scrutiny in a company of clinicians. And we were a group of social scientists. And it was a very interesting experience for them to even decide to fund a project which was one led by only social scientists in public health. And we did not have a clinician on board. That wasn't done purposely. It was just happened so. I've had several generations of students who have gone through this course on comparative health systems. Some of them have published on their own. Then I should make a special mention of Tia Sangla, who is the only student who proceeded to do a doctoral study in this area, and also was a recipient of the ICS Harvard Yenching Institute Fellowship. And now she is presently in Taiwan, mastering the Chinese language. So I keep telling her, you will be the first person who has a training in public health, but can also read and write in Chinese. So I really think it's been a very, very interesting and a fantastic journey. We've made many friends across, especially scholars who are Chinese and who are working on health system. I'm delighted to say Xiaofeng Fang is from the Monash University, has joined us today on the webinar. As you know, it's the lunar year and many people will probably have not holidaying, and I've had many regrets saying that they won't be able to join today. But it has been a fantastic journey. And I just want to say thank you to the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health for giving us, and the old JNU that gave us the freedom to innovate, to dream, and to be able to get into collaborations with institutions that are meaningful. And we hope that this is the legacy we will leave for the next generation to carry on. And with these words, I want to hand it over to the next generation, Dr. Madhuri Manandi, to please speak. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Professor Oberoi and Professor Baru. It's actually a pleasure to be here today and speak a bit about the work that we have been doing in the last decade. It seems like a long decade, but I think it just seems like we started yesterday. So in a sense, what I would want to do here is kind of also put my thoughts together on my personal journey as a public health researcher and within that, like the domain of China and being a China watcher over the last decade. I joined the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health, JNU, a center, as Professor Baru, Professor Oberoi have mentioned, is located in the School of Social Sciences. And this was more than two decades back. Earlier, you would find such centers and located in medical colleges, but this was one of an exception. And since its inception was one of the pioneering institutes looking at social determinants of health and also looking at several structural barriers to health services and how do health systems and health service systems actually develop in a country. My interest in comparative studies actually in health systems actually started with Professor Baru's course that she was giving on comparative health systems. She herself conceptualized and taught this course, and we studied several countries along with it, but China was one of them. Some of the famous books that were available in those times were the usual ones that we also read depicting post-revolution Mao's China. So whether it was Function by William Hinton or Away with All Pests, An English Surgeon in People's China by Joshua Horn, and The Health of China by the couple, a sociologist and a physician, Siddell and Siddell. These were all very fascinating books at that time to read. And this was also the early 2000s. So this was also a time when China was still going to come through major reforms within the health sector. So there was a lot of literature coming from China on the rise of inequalities in health services, related to regional, inter and intra-provincial inequalities, rural and urban, gender-related, and a lot on what was happening in China in the 80s and the 90s. So this was basically the 90s, and I think Professor Baru alluded to this, that a lot of researchers who were located in Western universities, mainly the British and American universities, who were also Chinese by origin, and also Western scholars, reporting on these transitions that were happening in health services. And one really wondered, like, what lay ahead. But one was able to access China only through this Western eye. And at that time, it was seemingly difficult to think about studying China exclusively and in a sustained manner without getting a sense of what was happening in China in other spheres, and without traveling to China and studying it from an Indian perspective. My interest actually stayed, and I, since China is not a country I could take exclusively, my MPhil actually was a comparative studies looking at health financing systems across the world. And I looked at financing models across the world. I researched the political, economic, social structures of these countries in the West, East, Southeast Asia regions to understand the influences these factors had over health service structures and trace the developments of their systems over the years. My PhD and post-PhD work focused on the transitions of health institutions and policy reforms within India. I have worked with national policy commissions looking at reforms from the macro to the micro level. I've worked also with national level NGOs, looked at what these reforms have meant at the district and community level, especially when the National Rural Health Mission was introduced in India, how these shaped in states that were poor and doing poorly in the human development indicators. This kind of gave a sense of complexities of both policy level discussions at the central level and how these unfold at the state and local level and the dynamics, as it were. My interest in comparative health systems was still alive, and a little over a decade back, I got this opportunity of starting a health unit under the leadership of Professor Baru at the ICS. At this point, ICS itself went through a major transition of being shifting out of the CSDS and having its own funding. While most of, I mean, this has also been talked about by the previous three speakers, like while ICS had China studies scholars coming from area studies, language departments, the first generation of China scholars were in India were keen on expanding it to other disciplines with the view that most scholars needed to approach and study China from their disciplines, not only from mainstream social sciences like sociology, political science, history, and economics, but also from applied social sciences like public health, education, development studies, and so on. As mentioned again, Professor Baru's longstanding relationship with the work that ICS was doing and with these China scholars, they had already collaborated with a paper, and that had actually been published when I had joined JNU at that time. And that was part of our essential reading when we were doing the comparative health system course. For me, coming to ICS was actually a beginning of a new phase in my career and also an adventure, because one didn't know what lay ahead. We didn't know what the resources, where the resources would come from. What we had was the support and the space that ICS gave us, the scholars within ICS gave us, but we were given complete independence to do our work and build it gradually. And that itself was the biggest contribution that ICS gave us in that sense, and because of which that freedom that we got, we were able to build our work gradually. As Professor Baru also mentioned, that we kind of had these small, we never kind of had these big ambitious plans in that sense about, oh, we are going to build this, you know, great health unit within a short period of time. We actually gave ourselves that time of, let's just take it in small building block kind of thing. So let's let one thing build over the other. Let's start small. So our first project, as Professor Oberoi also mentioned, was on transnational actors funded by the ICSSR. That was a modest amount of money, but that really funded our fieldwork, helped us to create our networks, helped us to understand what was actually happening in the health sector reforms in China over the years, what was going on in the contemporary space of the reforms. And we kept building our work through these small funds. We built a repository with books that we could purchase from the ICSSR funds. We built our networks and collaborations from various universities, as the map showed, while researching. We conduct research on several domains. I mean, Professor Baru has already spoken about these, but health sector reforms pervaded all through. But we also looked at the actors and global actors and national actors who influenced these reforms. We looked at disease control programs, especially tuberculosis. We looked at care for older persons. We are still working on that. We looked at medical education and also students going from China to India, which was also funded from by a public institution, NIPA, the National Institute of Public Education. So they also got very interested in what was happening both ways, like why were the students traveling to China for seeking education and medicine, and why was China also keen on getting international students. So that itself was a very fascinating journey, again, where we visited also some of the other provinces and met a lot of students. So this is another work that we are still looking at in the sense of what's happening or what's happening in the post-COVID era. How are things opening up for students now? All of this that we worked on and gradually and built, I think also couldn't have been done without the scholars and researchers at the Institute working on China, who also informed our work. Professor Baru has also mentioned this, but Professor Manoranjan Mohanty's years of work, his book on China's transformation, The Success Story and Success Trap, was really fascinating as it gave the decades of transformations that happened in one particular area of China, but also what happened at the national and the and how what were the global influences. He also edited a volume during our time on the 19th Party Congress, where I was able to contribute a paper on what was happening in the health sector. Professor Patricia Oberoi's work on family and kinship and her leadership on Regional Cooperation Forum of the BCIM was particularly fascinating. I was able to contribute again a background paper on the health sector in the BCIM region and what cooperation was possible in the region. Dr. Bhim Subba's work on the political leadership has been really fascinating. Dr. P.K. Anand's work on labor welfare, Dr. Devashish Chaudhary and Dr. Shering Chonzam's work on minorities, Dr. Madhavi Thampi and Dr. Nirmala Sharma's work on history of cooperation and links between communities in India and China, and Professor Hemant Adlakha, who gave me numerous opportunities to have discussions on various aspects relating to what was happening within health sector reforms, violence, the culture of violence within hospitals. Professor Shabri Mitra and Professor Srimati Chakraborty also contributed a lot of thinking in terms of the way they informed, all of them informed our understanding on China and Chinese society, and we deeply appreciate that. Probably the only limitation has been the language. I did try to pick it up in the beginning years. I was able to, in my first visit, kind of able to communicate somewhat in China's, but in Chinese in Shanghai and Beijing. But that is something that I hope to gain some capacities on. I have always planned to study it on my own, but that's something I feel that I have not been able to sustain. But I'm glad the next generation, like Tia and all, have taken it up. And, you know, it's something that would be really interesting to see how they use the Chinese language within to supplement their research on public health. So these are the things that, I would just want to end here, that it's been 10 years. Even though I have physically moved away from ICS, I think I'm still part of this institute, and I would want to and love to continue my work there. Even as a fellow at CSIP, I have been studying and researching health systems in a comparative perspective, and China is one of the countries I'm still studying. But of course, my study in China will go beyond that, and will look at more in terms of the society and the changing structures and how it's evolving, how the health services evolves, and how health systems evolve over time in China. I would like to end here and thank you all very much for being here. Thank you. Over to the chair.
Yeah, thanks. So yes, I'm sorry, I was just going back in time and memory lane, and as you both, Rama and Madhu, took me through the whole process, it was really a very, very fun filled, hard work, backbreaking, disappointments and elations, and all sorts of things that went into making this journey. But you know, at the end of the day, what really thrills us is that this, if and as I hope it will, the need to study the health systems, and particularly the wake of the pandemic, I think a lot more youngsters will try to do research on health systems in China and, of course, India, given that we are such large populous societies, that as the curiosity and interest and research on this expands, ICS will be the first stop. That's something that is really very, very empowering and very extremely heartwarming, because that is what, as a collective, we have been aspiring for. That, you know, the institute becomes the place where young minds, curious minds who are venturing into non-traditional areas of research on China find the kind of expertise and resources they need. So thanks to both of you, Rama and Madhu, for really establishing this as one of the strong pillars of the ICS's study on China. Now, Patricia, you were the discussant and I was the chair. So you've already given us a very nice introduction. Would you like to come in again at this point briefly and just react to something, or should we then invite responses or reactions from them?
Yeah, before that, we'll be looking at the research portal.
Okay.
I'd like Patricia to come in.
All right. So Patricia, you could just briefly just come in here, and then we'll look at the portal, and then we'll open up the... All right.
You have to unmute yourself.
I don't have much else to say. And this has been a fascinating journey with the key players as we've gone along. I think when you're talking now, I'd like to reflect a little bit on wider comparisons, not only China, but what China and India can do together as sort of galactic players in two regions of Asia, and with reference to other countries in the region, because that is the framework of your present project. And I think that That is a very important, new take. Not just China and India, which gets you into one sort of paradigm, but, there are anthropologists who think that, you can learn a lot about the human condition by studying primitive people in very small tribes living in little islands. So we needn't just look for the big, bad, and more beautiful, but we should also look, as comparativists within the global setting that you're dealing with. And I think that that's something that your new framework is going to open up. And I'd like to hear more about that, if you wouldn't mind. The places and persons dotted on the map that we've had in front of us to begin with. Thank you.
That is the Asia-Pacific Observatories Consortium.
Yeah.
And so we have partners from within India. And if I could request my colleagues who are involved in the consortium to turn on their cameras. From the Center of Social Medicine and Community Health, we have Ramila Bish, who is also associated with the Institute of Chinese Study. And we have CU Thracia from Trivandrum, who is working with us on this project. From China, we have the Shanghai Health Development Research Center. I think none of them have joined today. And from the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, we have Alex Ching Wei. And we now have a South Korean partner, Kim Hong-soo, who actually is based in Seoul. And what we have done in this project is actually, there are two phases to this project. One is a review. And in that review, we have covered Sri Lanka, but we've also, other partners have covered Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Chinese have covered Japan, and looking at arrangements for older persons care in these respective countries. So if you like, we have countries at different levels of demographic transition, and also Singapore is on the countries that are included. You have different levels of the development of health system, both in terms of financing, in terms of structures of provisioning. You also have variations in the market public mix in these countries. So one of the things we're looking at is, because it concerns older persons' care, we are interested in looking at what we call as continuum of care, where we want to look at the health services and social care and the back and forth linkages that are available. And what is the complexity of this architecture? What are the contradictions and conflicts? What are the enablers, et cetera? So you also have innovations, and the Chinese are great at innovations. And in Kerala also, you have this culture of innovations. So interestingly, we also see innovations at municipality levels of trying to bring these linkages together. And of course, it's like an evolving arc, because you have extremely better developed systems, and then you have systems that are evolving and are trying to find their feet. And so is there some cross-learning that is possible? Can we learn from some of the mistakes that the Chinese see as potential mistakes, because they have a very strong hospital insurance-led model at this point for universal health coverage, but now they're finding that it's very costly, and they have to reinvent and reinvest in primary level care, especially for older persons, and also find institutional arrangements that will ensure community level engagements for older persons. So it's quite fascinating that these different contexts actually throw up very, very different ideas. And the consortium is one space where these ideas are getting debated, dialogued, and exchanged. And I think that has been very, very exciting. Keeping a group together is not easy, but we've done it twice, and we may do it even a third time. I don't know. Thank you.
with that would be
So Rama, shall we see your portal now? Will you take us through that?
But before we go through the portal, I just want to say that Madhurima had mentioned how we had built a repository. We had done a very rough inventory of books and, you know, materials we had gathered over time, areas of interest which we read but may not have directly used in our writings or in our projects. So one of the things I thought, and I had a conversation with Mr. Ashok Kant when he was the director, I said, you know, I think it's time we sort of create a research portal, which will be a project, which will be an evolving project, because it is not a one-time thing. And so I requested Tia Sangla, Tia, if you're there, please switch on your camera, to come on as a research assistant for a month and to be able to find domains and identify domains which we could initially begin with in this research portal, which would be open to scholars, which would be housed in the website of the Institute of Chinese Studies. And we had a wonderful cooperation from the ICS team. And I especially want to mention K.K. Venkatraman, Rangoli Mitra, Arnav Joshi. And then, of course, for this event, Yamini Meena, who actually created that map. I said, can you please create the map? Because it gives a visual idea of the collaborations we have. Shubhadeep and Partho for this. And I wanted to request Rija, who has also been with the team, to take us through the portal now. Rija, over to you.
Sure, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Ma'am, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Sorry. So in the next couple of minutes, I'll be quickly running you all through the health portal on our website. So this is the health portal. The ICS-CSM-CH health resource portal in itself is very comprehensive, as you could see. It is divided into 10 to 12 sections, each section reflecting the various domains in public health research, such as health systems, gender and health, elderly care, urbanization and health, so on and so forth. Each section has a drop-down menu or a drop-down button where you could find the references pertaining to that particular topic attached as a PDF document. For instance, if you click on elderly care, you could access the references pertaining to elderly care in China. So this is an example of one of the PDF documents that we have on the website on elderly care. As mentioned earlier, the health portal has been conceptualized as a very comprehensive and dynamic resource portal. Currently, the portal covers the period from the beginning of the 19th century to the Mao period and the later developments that include liberalization and health sector reforms from the late 1970s. But as we go ahead, we plan on keeping updating and expanding this portal as we get to access more databases. The role of our collaborators will be important in this regard. Also, as new research or newer areas of research open up in the field of public health and medicine, the portal will be periodically updated to showcase that. If someone wants to access the entire document in one go, so we also have a section towards the end of the webpage where a PDF document is attached, which clubs together all the references pertaining to the various heads mentioned earlier in one single document. So this is the entire document of the health portal. We hope that this portal would be useful not just to public health scholars and researchers, but also students at the postgrad and undergrad level who might be interested in just exploring and learning more about public health in China. That's it from my end, ma'am. Thank you.
Well, any comments or any observations on that? Rama, Madhu?
Not really. I think, as I said, it's an evolving project, Alka, and we do hope that, you know, all of us who are interested, my colleagues in the center who may wish to contribute, students who will hopefully explore it, and others. And I think we will continue our work on this as we go on.
And what I really appreciate about this is I was going through some of those resources over there, and you know, it's very good that it has been categorized in a very user-friendly fashion, in the sense that it's not very complex, like people only who are health professionals or who are into health, even general students on China who are probably wanting some information about that can actually access. Very interesting. And readings are also ranging from simple articles to very highly researched pieces. So I think this would be very useful to students in general also, and not just, you know, targeting at people who are wanting to study health. So that's something I really appreciated about this portal.
In fact, when Tia and I worked together on this to conceptualize the themes, we also looked at the material we had to do that. But another very important aspect which we have indicated in the portal is that there are many archives in China, in some of the Chinese universities, as well as Harvard. And this is where we had a conversation with Dr. Elizabeth Perry at the Harvard Yenching Institute. They have, for example, the Hume collection, you know, which because he interacted with both China and India, the whole area of missionaries in medical care, which I've had long conversations on with Patricia, is a highly underexplored area. And one of the things that Madhu and I had wanted to do for very long is to look at missionaries that were active both in China and India and what kind of conversations was going on between them. The idea actually came when we had Professor Ma Min from Wuhan come and talk about how the first Bible, printing of the Chinese Bible, took place in India by the missionaries. They created the printing press and the typesetting, etc. So then, in fact, Madhu and I had many conversations with Professor Ma Min. Due to COVID, it has been disrupted. They were very interested in looking at this because they have the Yale collection. You see, American scholarship has engaged with China, you know, and have established collaborations probably 20 years ago, but they have the entire collection of Yale on history of American missionaries in the Wuhan History of Medicine Center. But the point is that it's got both the English and the translations in Chinese there. So you can imagine, in fact, he took us through that place. It's fascinating. And then they have, for example, their rural surveys. So one of the things I was asking Professor Ma Min is, can we get access to that? He said, yes, we will have a collaborative agreement and you may be able to access. So they have longitudinal data, health, economics, you know, of that Wuhan region. So, you know, I'll need another lifetime to do what I really think is possible. I mean, it's just so exciting. And I think we have just touched the tip of the iceberg in terms of collaborations in this area. But for example, Western China, we have nothing, and be another story altogether, right? So anyway, so these are some of the possibilities that lie ahead. And if we get permission from these institutions to offer permission to scholars from India to access this material, I think that will be the next round of conversation, because we don't have to physically go to these archives, but if we can get permission to access them on a case-by-case basis, I think it will be quite a breakthrough.
Indeed, indeed. Madhu, would you like to say anything here?
Not really. I mean, I wasn't actually part of building the portal, but I would just want to say that even in the past, when we were developing the ICS website, we did try to create a separate web page of resources for the whatever we were gaining out of our research on the health sector. So we would put up our projects and the project reports and everything. I think that needs to be kind of transported to this particular portal now as a resource, because we have a lot of many outputs and reports that came out of our research and will eventually come also. And so those things need to be linked to this. Also the conference reports and all, we have had several conferences and dialogues over the past years, past decades. So those reports are also available. We could just put those up also as resources. Also, I was thinking Professor Barun had spoken about it earlier, like series of documentaries and all that's available from China. I mean, that's also because she was planning to introduce it as part of a pedagogy of comparative health systems in JNU. So, I mean, the whole idea of teaching through documentaries and all would be quite fascinating in that sense. So probably resources linked to what is available in the public domain, and not just on health, but of course, telling about society and, the history of China and how it links up to the health systems. So that way, I think Patricia ma'am has a question on, I think she missed out. We don't have that.
Patricia, actually, we didn't have adequate material to include traditional medicine. This is an evolving conversation with Madhulika Banerjee. And I think one of her PhD students is an HYI fellow. That's a domain where we would like to work with both Madhulika and her student to populate a separate domain on traditional medicine. It's not an area, I mean, I have read, but I have not pulled together adequate material to populate it as yet. One of the areas of traditional Chinese medicine has been conversations with the Veda. And we have found that the relationship and the markets for traditional Chinese medicine in Africa through the health support that the Chinese government have been, and in fact, they're called as the mini World Bank of Africa, and the amount of capacity buildup that they do. So we have been having a conversation with Veda, and we actually wanted to evolve a collaborative project on that. But let's see, I think we need to have more conversations with Veda and Vic. She was also very excited, not just about the health services, but also about the traditional Chinese medicine's pharma penetration into this part of the world.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, what you said, now that one would probably need another lifetime to start looking at what fascinates me is that ever new areas, avenues, ideas are just sort of coming up at such rapid pace, and they offer so much of promise and potential in terms of exploration. So, yeah, but, a man's reach should exceed his grasp, as they say. So let's... Patricia, anything? I thought you wanted to say something. Otherwise, shall we open it up for any comments, observations, questions?
Well, the only other thing I was going to say is I rather missed focus on reproductive health linked to the demographic dynamics. That, of course, you are looking at one end of it in aging, but what about reproductive health and so on? That seems to be a very... very difficult area at the moment in China, and it's going to happen in India too.
Yes.
Oh, I yes, of course. I mean, that opens up another can of worms, I think. there are a whole lot of complexities in this whole business of reproductive policies and systems. Anyway, So now we have a fairly large number of people attending this. So anybody would like to come in with their observations or comments or suggestions or questions? Well, I think there is a sense of being completely overwhelmed by what has been put out before them. I think that they really know. Questions are not what come to mind. It's just a question. The matter is more in terms of how much now is there available. And I think what we want communicated through this special occasion is that here is a repository for all people who would like to start looking at this and get in touch with the Institute of Chinese Studies. And not just that you have access to this portal, which is obviously free access, but we are also in a position to put you in touch with the right kind of resource persons in case you're wanting to do work on this in this area. So that aspect is also there. To all those who are listening to us. Nothing in the, Akshat, is there anything else in the chat box?
Oh, nothing as of now.
I think several of my colleagues are here. If anybody wants to add something, please do.
Manu will certainly have something to say, Professor.
I was.
Yes.
I just want to first of all, record my not appreciation, really gratitude to this whole group, and I remember. When for the 50th anniversary book.
Sorry to interrupt, Manu, but is it the case that your camera is off because it's only a black screen, or is it some technical problem?
Some technical problem.
Oh, okay, all right.
If you can hear me, that's
enough. Yes, we can hear you fine. Go ahead.
So I remember when Alka Rama and Geeta Nambisan teamed up to have that chapter in the volume, Crossing the Bridge of Dreams. And I think we are in the process of crossing the bridge of dreams. And at least the one of you, I mean, all the programs flourished, education not as much, but this program really, we are very proud of. And thank you, Rama, Madhurima, Rama, for your leadership and getting Madhurima to the group and to ICS and leading it all these some 20 years and more. You have given the histories, therefore I don't have to add anything. My question is, what is your, let's say, 5-year perspective for ICS and the program as a whole? And in that perspective, are you adding any dimension that really further questions the dominant global paradigm of healthcare? Because I'm glad the Chinese are reassessing their insurance-based health system now, and we would like to know more about that in the future. But in terms of really questioning the dominant paradigm, because you have questioned it through so many of your queries and projects and writings. So what other indications can you give us as a part of the agenda for the next 5 years? Because this is a signature program, not only of ICS, but I think in the sphere of political economy of healthcare that I would see in our times. Thank you. Thank you again, Rama and Madhurima.
Before I come in, Patricia, to answer your question, I've asked Tia to speak and tell you, answer your question on this, the two questions that you've raised in the chat box. Tia, can you please come in?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, everyone. So the question on reproductive health, I did not give a separate section on reproductive health because I was looking at gender and health and also population studies specifically as categories. So within that, you will find studies by Susan Greenhall, who has done a lot of important work on reproductive health in China and also other studies. So if you want to look at reproductive health studies in China, I think if you go to the section on population health and also on gender and health, I think that is where you will locate those articles that you would be looking on out for on that particular topic.
Professor Monty, there are a couple of very important areas that I want to explore in the future. And I think one area I want to look at, and this is really coming out of the whole COVID story, is to look at public spending on research and development in science in the Chinese story as compared to the Indian. And I think, you know, when you look at capabilities and how they managed their collaborations, and don't forget their interactions with, you know, when everybody says China is responsible for the COVID pandemic and how it all began in Wuhan story, there's another very long history of how the both the National Institute of Health in the United States and the CDC based in Atlanta, the amount of American funding to Chinese R&D was enormous. And in fact, the Wuhan lab was a collaborative venture between the Americans and the Chinese. And apart from that, the Chinese themselves invested a great deal in scientific research. So I think there is that one piece of the story which is very often overlooked by most of the discourses that are taking place. So in a sense, it's not just the American scientists, but it's the European scientists as well. So there is this very long relationship of, and there is a great deal of skill building, technology transfers that are happening. At the same time, the Chinese are also developing their own capacities. So for example, one of the sets of data we were looking at how there is a very clearly stratified market for medical technology production in China today. They began with complete dependence on the West, Western firms for medical technology. Then they went through a phase where they said, we now understand and we have capacity to produce mid-range equipment. We will only rely on them for the new generation of MRIs and CAT scans. So actually, they very gradually kicked out the foreign investors and foreign firms in China. So the pharma story is very similar. So, you know, I mean, there is this whole area of technology and pharma and the development of expertise and knowledge to do that. And of course, the generic story in India and China is a very interesting area to develop. In fact, there was a conversation with Ravi and the Reddy Labs in Hyderabad to say that can we have some kind of a collaborative project. It was the initiative, of course, Ravi did have a conversation, but it didn't go very far. But the dependence of India Indian pharmaceuticals on China for those basic formulations for production of generic drugs is another area. The third, to me, which is very interesting from the point of view of geopolitics, is China's heavy investment and growing presence in Southeast Asia as well as Africa as being very important for building health systems in that area. So, you know, it's, if you like, it's the soft power that is being used for their, you know, expanding their economic interests. But they have done it in a very, very systematic way. So if you like, if there is, so the World Bank doesn't have a buy-in in those areas. Even if they did, they were gradually replaced by the Chinese. And we got an inkling of this when we were having conversations with colleagues in Fudan University, who said that the Chinese are very heavily invested in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, you know, the entire Thailand even, where they're going in for capacity building of health professionals across levels in public health. And we even tried to have a collaborative project, but it didn't work. So, I mean, I'm just saying that these are areas which are very important. And lastly, this whole cross-border thing on communicable diseases. Patricia Madhurima wrote about malaria and even HIV and things like that. So these are all porous borders and population movements are happening. And so how do you, so what kind of surveillance and inputs do you have in those spaces? That's another area. I don't know, I'll probably get better ideas. But these are ideas that excite me. And I know that it'll take a long while to sort of find my own energies and a team. You see, building a team is very important. And I'm hoping that we will be able to build a team and this research portal will open up a possibility for people who are not public health people, but who are interested in exploring this area. And maybe we will have younger people joining this group.
Thank you. I think that's a very, very encouraging agenda.
Madam Chair, could I come in again here?
But of course.
I'd like to say that one of the something that struck me with Madhurima's presentation was that not only is one looking at inter-Asian comparisons and so on, but actually what one is learning from this are things that are relevant to understanding the position of the people in, say, the British national health system or in Western countries. So when it's not just a question of, you know, the Western model and so on, but the Western model as it stands is increasingly unjust. And in the ways that Madhurima described in her paper, so it's not only looking towards developing countries, but even speaking to the developed nations. The two things that struck me there were the questions of specialist versus primary care. When I was thinking of the role of GPs, we don't have GPs in our lives anymore. And ask anyone in any developed, well-developed Western country how easily they can get to a specialist. Well, the waiting lists are ever so long and they're not readily accessible by people who are otherwise in the public health systems. And the other is the insurance dependent or enabled medical aspect, which this group has looked at in their own work. That is, those who can afford medical insurance, which is big business in India now, are definitely much better off. And the system is now oiled to for that expansion, that sector expansion. And it leaves a lot of people without care. So, I think that this has lessons for the other being the Western medical system as people experience it there in their variety. It's not the best model of how to deal with health?
I think I'll just, comment on Ma'am's thing. I mean, yeah, this also comes from, in a sense, what I spoke 2 weeks back in the Wednesday seminar at the ICS. So, I mean, yes, these are things that are transitioning in every country, like especially every country, in a sense, globally, we are at crossroads post-COVID, especially when looking at the health service systems. We are all looking towards a more publicly financed health services, because it's getting more and more clear that how the health services all over are inequitable. Even the best performing countries, so-called, in the past didn't do well in response to COVID. So, of course, the primary health service systems, where we have a referral with a GP and preventive and promotive health services also being integrated at that level, has come back into focus. I mean, it's not like it wasn't in focus before. It's just become even more prominent and accentuated now post-COVID, that how important it is to build that primary level structure. And we have been looking at China vis-a-vis that over the last two decades, and we do see the transitions happening there. And especially post now, I mean, also taking from Professor Mohanty's thing as to what to look at the next 5 years, I think that these would be structures of the health services would be important, how the Chinese respond to the reforms now, like what kind of reforms actually take shape now in China in terms of their primary care, which they had already begun to, in the sense, strengthen, but they have increasingly like hospital dependent system. So how are they able to build it? And also, are they able to, is insurance something that can be really reversed in that sense? I mean, they're already deep into and the insurance model, and is it something, and they've universalized it. So where will they go from there? It's also a heavily subsidized insurance system. So in a sense, they are definitely doing better than other insurance systems, which are just contributory or voluntary, where the individual is paying part of the premiums. So all these things are important questions, and these will inform what's happening world over in the next few years. Thank you.
I think Madhu,
you're muted.
You have to unmute again. Yeah.
Hey.
No, you're muted. No, well, it doesn't, we can't see the icon. So I don't know.
We are. You know, there are some strange things happening here, because on the one hand, one thinks of the people left out under current global models for the development of hospital care and so on. On the other hand, having come through this present pandemic, and I think the Chinese must be feeling the same, that in even in these countries, the disease like COVID and plenty more to come don't actually choose between the rich and the poor all that much. I mean, in Delhi, we saw people who, with very high status, with money, with contacts, with everything, sailing around from one hospital to another and dying in their cars, because it was not possible even to get that care. So I think, you know, these reflections are also, you know, there's no simplicity to these questions, but even but pandemics can pick out the well-off as well as the otherwise socially and economically marginalized. And that is something really to reflect on.
Yes, I agree, ma'am. In fact, Professor Baru and I were thinking, like, this is, of course, not research, but in a sense of like probably have a series of presentations by renowned scholars on epidemics past and present. I mean, taking China and India into focus. So probably that's something we could have in the short term, like, you know, have some of the scholars who have written about COVID and also have written about pandemics in the past and kind of bring them together and have a conversation around it. So that would be an interesting beginning to in this new phase.
I would imagine that once we come to the, hopefully the, not quite, I mean, it's never going to go away. That's what we are told. It's always going to be around, but at least the more lethal kinds of strains and viruses, once they become less lethal, I think there would be a keenness to learn about the experiences of different countries in dealing with the pandemic. The larger, the hugely populated countries would have other concerns, developing countries have other concerns. And as Patricia said, that you may be middle country and yet you may have people on both sides of the divide suffering equally. So there are big questions here about systems of healthcare, access, affordability, and simply the wherewithal to meet the challenges of such a huge assault on populations.
I also think that we have a lot to learn about how, you know, some of the successes and failures of planning for health services for older persons, because as we age as a society, they have already passed the silver curve, right? I mean, they are really on top of the silver curve. And you can see the many challenges that arise, especially because they also have this one-child policy generation of people who don't have much of a family. And they also have a feminized, the gender composition, women outlaw living men. You know, so there is a whole range of things that are playing out in China. So you have the young old, the middle old, and then the old old, you know. And we saw some fascinating things done by primary health care for long-term and end-of-life care in Shanghai, which we've written about. But I'm saying that, so there are many models that are operating which are worth looking at. I'm not saying we can necessarily transplant them, but these are issues that are going to come up even in our country. And we already see it. My colleague Thracia is here. We already see it in Kerala, those kinds of issues which the policymakers have to grapple.
Undoubtedly, I think even as we are looking at what have been our concerns so far, a whole new slew of challenges is coming up. And definitely, for that very reason, China becomes more important, because they are ahead of the curve in terms of the demographics, in terms of the spread of healthcare. How will they deal with this aging society issues? Is really going to be something that we need to follow closely, both, I think, in political economic terms, but also in health terms. So if there are any more comments or questions, can we have them now, please? We are almost at the end of our allotted time. Well, looks like Rama and Madhu, you have given everybody plenty of thought to ponder and plenty of things to chew. And I would just like to say that in every possible way, this creation of the health portal actually justifies, enhances, and increases the relevance of an institution like the ICS in terms of expanding the scope of China studies. This is going to be a really very significant dimension in terms of encouraging younger generations to come into areas which are going to be increasingly much more significant for our societies. This is once again doubly relevant. Trebly relevant is the Institute's mandate to network and build connections across institutions, across universities, and therefore the connection with the Jawaharlal Nehru University, the CSMCH, Sangamitra, and of course the previous chairpersons who were with us throughout this building up of this, once again underscores the necessity of institutional collaboration and the possibilities of really strengthening our capacities and our abilities to look into these areas. So on all these three counts, the health portal really represents and symbolizes the best that ICS can do with dedicated and committed professionals and academics. So thank you all very much. Please do spread the word around that we have something like this out here. And Rama and Madhu, more power and strength to your efforts. And we will be very glad to continue to build and support this in every way we can. Thank you all very much. And
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thank you, Mr. Khan.
Thank you.
And all the those who helped us through this process.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ma'am, if there are no other questions, I shall seek your permission to get to a close today's highly informative session.
Please do.
Right, ma'am. With this, we shall wrap up today's special event. We thank all the panelists for gracing the event with their presence and for giving us their precious time. The video of today's discussion shall be available on the ICS YouTube channel. We would also like to welcome all of you to our upcoming seminar next week, which is a book discussion on Churchill and India, Manipulation of Betrayal, authored by Ambassador Kishan Rana. At the ICS, we conduct seminars every Wednesday, and information regarding the same is available on the ICS website. You may also subscribe to our newsletter for regular updates. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.